Welcome to the Flawed Podcast, where we get to know different people's focused lifestyles and their winning disciplines. And now, your host, the one and only Peter Larson.
Thank you very much. Welcome everyone to episode 51 of the Flawed Podcast. This is yet another episode about productivity and Evernote. And in this episode, we meet Ray Sidney Smith. He is a productivity technology management consultant. Say that five times as quickly as you can. Just kidding. In this episode, we discuss Ray's four buckets of productivity. He introduces us to getting more done, which can be considered an extension of GTD, as we have talked a lot about in this podcast. We discuss also the six levels of focus. We talk about the importance of dividing your life into categories. And in the end of the show, I would like to call it a masterclass of Evernote. We are deep diving into quite advanced techniques for managing your Evernote, or your commonplace, as people can call it as well. If you're new to the show and new to Evernote, do not miss the previous episodes where we go into depth in understanding Evernote. That is episode 49 and 50, in case you missed it. I hope you will enjoy this show with Ray Sidney Smith, Getting More Done with Evernote. Enjoy. So let's jump right in. If someone asks you what you do, what do you tell them?
Well, I am a productivity technology management consultant. And what that means in a mouthful is that I help primarily small business owners and executives gain greater focus through technology. And I have been studying psychology since the late 90s and found a passion for how that actually interacted with productivity and technology. And it's led me to this point of wanting to help small business owners and executives understand how the nexus of good personal productivity principles, technology, and business come together. And so I spend my days helping business owners do that. I've been an Evernote certified consultant since 2015. Mm-hmm. And I've been having a lot of fun helping business owners with Evernote as well.
All right. I mean, there's a lot of nice words there, productivity, nexus, business, and so on. But I mean, we share the common interests of Evernote. That's how we got connected, of course. So, but if you tell us more what productivity is for you, how do you define it?
Sure. So I always think about it as being getting the right things done with the right amount of resources. And right is a subjective term, and it just means that it's meaningful and fulfilling in your life, right? Mm-hmm. So resources can include, but aren't particularly limited to, time, energy, tools, and people. And personal productivity is all that which is within your control.
Okay. Nice. So you have created several frameworks, and we will try to dig into each one of them. But one that I want to talk a bit more about is what you call getting more done. Because we have talked about getting things done, the framework. I think we have 7 or 8 episodes just covering that topic. And of course, we had 2 specific Evernote episodes before this one. But what is getting more done?
Well, it's basically an extension of the getting things done methodology, and it's an ever-growing system that I have been percolating over the last decade. So forgive me for having missing pieces here, but the greater focus behind getting more done is that most people are not particularly poor at personal productivity once they have become a certain level of productivity enthusiast. Right. So you and I have read Getting Things Done, and yep. I'm presuming a good portion of your listeners have now been inculcated in the GTD material.
I hope
and Yeah, and so we all get to know productivity material. And to be quite honest, as I say to most people, you know, you have productive skills that you've been using, and so you are getting things done, even if you feel like you aren't. And getting more done is just about that. It's just becoming a little bit more productive sequentially. And what I've done is I have identified the faculties that I believe are important for people to pay attention to as they are becoming more productive, as they want to get more done. Mm-hmm. And they fit into sort of four buckets. Focus, which really encompasses attention and energy. Habit, or more particularly routines, because habits are hard, routines are slightly bit easier. Mm-hmm. Motivation, which includes the skills of accountability or development of accountability in teams. Yes. And then organization, which requires time, action, and project management. So I've taken these faculties or these skills of time, energy, action, project, routines, attention, accountability, and team management, and really bundled them together into these categories of focus, habit, motivation, and organization. And what most people don't realize is that whenever you decide to become more productive, yeah, and get more done, you actually start through the process of focusing, then deciding on your habit or the routines that need to be developed. Then you seek out the motivations or identify the motivations finally, or then exhibit the skills of accountability, and then you start to get organized, right? What's the time that needs to be associated with this? What are the actions? What are the projects necessary to make those things happen? And I have done a very basic webinar, which you can find on my website, and you'll have that in the show notes. So people can go ahead and see a little bit more of a description of what getting more done is all about, and maybe some of the more particulars. But as I see it, typically the getting more done concept is really about how do you take these areas of life and individually become more productive in them. And so I've just devised this idea that, and it's very similar to a mashup between, in GTD, Horizons of Focus, yes, and the concept of areas of focus and accountability, right? So David Allen has this Horizon 2 concept.
Yes. Do you mind explaining to the listeners? We talked a bit about horizons and the tiers and so on in a Swedish episode. Do you mind explaining them a bit more from your perspective?
Sure. So I've actually come up with the, and forgive me, you want to talk about all the horizons?
Maybe the cliff notes for the listeners.
Yeah, sure.
If possible.
Sure, absolutely. Believe you me, I could talk all day about GTD. So there's no stopping me once I get started. But the horizons of focus are six levels that David Allen has devised to help people stratify as well as understand when you need to step into and focus on particular projects or actions. Hmm. And so you start off at the bottom, which David Allen considers the most important. Yep. Moving up to the highest level, which David Allen considers least important. And so ground level is the next action, the next physical step.
Exactly.
Next up is Horizon 1, which is the project level. Horizon 2, areas of focus and accountability. Horizon 3, which are goals. What are the short-term goals? That is one to two-year goals. Mm-hmm. Then we go up to mission, long-term goals, and then vision and purpose, those things of answering the questions, why? Yep. Why am I here? Why am I part of this organization? Why am I doing this thing? And you can use this both on as a framework for looking at it in terms of the project level, as well as on longer horizons. What are you doing across your entire productivity system?
Yep.
And what I've done in getting more done is I've really just fleshed out the horizon two. Right, because David Allen doesn't spend a lot of time identifying your areas of focus and accountability, and I call these life categories. Hmm. And life categories, I think sort of like a wheel, a bicycle wheel, the hub and spoke, your areas of focus and accountability, those life categories are the spokes that connect and support the rest of your life. Hmm. If you're not good at those pieces, at those fundamentals, you're not going to be very good at the rest of your life, right? So, for example, we have a various number of health requirements in order to be physically productive in any way, in any way, shape, or form in your life. That could include sleep, nutrition, physical fitness, which includes cardiovascular flexibility and strength training. That could include all kinds of things, your physical hygiene, right? Just being clean and appropriate in environments, right? And then it broadens to areas that are a little bit more subjective, right? You can define an area of your life as wealth, which could handle assets and money and those kinds of things, or you might decide to bifurcate that into home finances or personal finances and work or business finances if you happen to be an entrepreneur. And then you have all kinds of other areas of your life that you might want to focus on. Now, again, the whole idea in getting more done is to create a pie, right? Create a pie chart that encompasses where these areas of your life fits so that you can then double back in that reflecting and review time to say, what has happened? What do I like about my life? And in those particular categories, you can then decide, what do you want to do to improve those areas? So it's only through reflecting upon what you are just uncomfortable about, right? So there's no growth other than through discomfort. And so, you know, growth happens in that place where you say, okay, this is the way it is, and I want it to be different. By looking at that pie in, my mother's Chinese, and so I come from a Chinese cultural background. We have the eight-sided bagua. People know this from, I'll give you a link to put in the show notes for people to see this, but the idea is it's an eight-sided diagram that most people know from feng shui, the Asian art of organizing one's home.
Yes, I heard about it.
So this bagua is actually eight particular parts, and you are able to break your life apart, break your life up into this kind of a pie, right? And so you see your health. You see your wellness, health and wellness. You see your wealth. You see your family. You see your relationships, and you sort of break your life up into these parts. And only through that sort of grouping of parts of your life together can you then decide, okay, I'm going to focus on this particular component of my health, and now I have a focus, right? And then you can decide, well, you know, once I've decided on that particular focus, now I'm going to do something about it, right? And many people just have a tough time with what that means. And so we go ahead and we decide, okay, what are the routines that I'm currently that are currently in existence in my life? Yes. And I think a lot of people forget that habits are really difficult to approach, right? You know, if you've read any of the material on habit development, it requires quite a bit of energy to be able to get a habit started. And this is not to say that habits won't still be difficult, but it makes it easier when you actually use the concept of the routine. And I don't mean the concept of routine in Charles Duhigg's sense of routine. You know, he talks about the cue, routine, and reward. I'm talking about a routine in the sense that we are actually chaining habits that are already in existence to those habits are being chained to the existing habits that are already there in your life, right?
Okay. So, for example, I have to ask you here, Ray, Charles Duhigg, I don't recognize that name. So
he's written several books, the Power of Habit and...
Oh, he's the author of Power of Habit. Okay,
yes,
great
the
book.
Times, the New York Times, yeah, the New Times journalist. Mm-hmm. And so Duhigg has written about this concept of cue, routine, and reward. And it's a framework that you can link to for people to see. But what I've recognized about all of the various ways in which people have talked about developing habits, it's just really difficult. You know, the researcher, Dr. Philippa Lally, you know, she says it could take between 18 and 264 days to develop a habit, depending upon its simplicity or complexity. Mm. Well, what if we can make that on the shorter end by tying it to things that are already happening, right? Yeah. So if every day you are going to eat 2 to 3 meals to 5 meals a day, depending upon your particular nutrition requirements, you have a natural anchor in your day in which you can tie another habit to create a routine. And what we find, at least what I found with my clients, is that the more they tie these things together, the more likely they are to develop new habits tied to these routines.
I like that linking. What's that saying again? Neurons that fire together, wire together, or something like that?
And vice versa. Neurons that wire together, fire together.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Hmm.
And it's very similar with habits. It's very similar with habits. And so, you know, you can't create more time in the day. You're stuck with the same 24 hours.
Yep.
But you can, over time, become more efficient with particular habits, and that then becomes a truncated amount of time taken to do the same thing. So the more you do something, the more consistently you do it, the better off you're going to be. And that's where habits and routines really can be much more fundamentally powerful.
All right. Let's try to make it practical for the listeners. I really like that myself, and I think it's a good approach. So let's say that what would be a good habit? Perhaps to read more. Read every day is perhaps a normal goal or a habit that people want to implement. How can they, if they are a normal person, implement that tomorrow, let's say, and make it stick?
Yeah, absolutely. So first is to identify a focus. Where does it fit in the category of life? So in this particular case, you might decide that this fits inside of an area that's personal development, or if you're reading for work.
For work.
Yeah, exactly. So it would fit under professional, work, career, business. It doesn't matter what you've defined that life category. But it helps to just categorize that particular item. Then we decide on where it fits into the routine, right? So for me, I like to read at particular times throughout my day, and I'm a heavy reader, so I can find many different points in my day where I would have time, and not have time, make time for that reading. So say that if you have trouble doing this, the best time, at least from my experience, is to say, I'm going to read whatever it is, 5 pages, and then go to lunch.
Okay.
So what we've done now is we've tied something that's established that will actually be physiologically uncomfortable for you if you don't finish doing it in an amount of time. Mm. And so there you go. You have something where you say, okay, I'm going to read 5 pages and I'm going to go to lunch. Or I'm going to go to lunch, and then as soon as I get back from lunch, I'm going to read 5 pages or 10 pages or whatever it might be. Now, again, you have a natural anchor so that every day that's what you do. Read 5 pages, you have lunch, and that ends up being the reward. The reward is I get to eat lunch as soon as I'm done with 5 pages. Yeah. Until I do that, I will not go eat lunch. Mm. And if you can create these kinds of if-then scenarios that are routinized, then you'll be much more likely to develop the habit. Now, if you have trouble, then you need to find motivation, right? And so that's where motivation comes into play. And you can say, okay, well, maybe the goal is to join a book club, right? Because I don't have the self-discipline right now or the established routines that allow me to be able to do that. So I'm going to force myself to have to show up and be accountable to others by doing so, right? And so we add that additional layer. And then it might even be more important for us to then organize that, because if we have accountability to the book club, that means that I need to put something in the calendar. And that leads us to organization. We're going to put something into the calendar. Hmm. We're going to maybe add a task in our task list to read 5 pages a day or 10 pages a day so that we're ready for the book club. And now you have a system designed around getting more done.
Yeah. I mean, I like it. So it's like 1, 2, 3, 4 with focus, habit, motivation, or organization. Why not mix in different systems? So I have a question for you. How many different areas, I mean, you mentioned wealth, health, and focus. How many life areas do you think is good to categorize your life in? Because it can be very big or very small.
Yeah, I find most people have between 10 and 15 life categories. And it just ends up being like, list the various areas in your own life, and some people want it very simple, so they decide personal and work, right?
Yeah.
And I totally understand those minimalists, and kudos to them. For the rest of us, you know, life is a little bit more complicated. And honestly, there's kind of that sweet spot, I think, between 10 and 15. And so, you know, if you just start listing off the areas of your world that you would like to have better and greater control of, you start to identify those. I tend to think that most areas of your life need 1 to 3 systems. So even if you have 10 or so categories, you're going to need, you know, 1 to 3 systems in order to handle that. So for example, if I decide health with a subcategory of nutrition, right?
Yep.
That requires a system in place to handle, or a subsystem if you want to think of it that way. You need a system to manage grocery shopping, where you're going to handle recipes, how you're going to manage the dinner schedule if you have a large family. To do that all in your head today is kind of foolish, right? We have the technology, even if it's paper and pen, even if it's a dry erase board and or an app or some kind of software, we have the tools to be able to externalize those things, and so why not? So we go ahead and externalize them so we don't have to apply that distress, right, the negative stress on ourselves with keeping it all in our heads. So by utilizing systems, we're capable of externalizing stressors and then using that excess energy to develop better routines, better review and reflection, and then to act better and stronger, you know, more present in the moment.
I totally agree.
Now remember, if you have a simple life and you want a simple system, yep, that's great. If you have a complicated life and you want a simple system, well, you're in for a lot of struggle, right?
Yeah.
If you created a complex life, or you feel the complex life has been put upon you, mm-hmm, you need a system to meet that.
Yeah.
And I think that's what GTD and David Allen's approach has done for people. It's given them as complicated a system as they need in order to deal with the life that they have either been dealt or have created. And I believe the same thing for getting more done. It's that you can make it as complex or as simple as you want it to be, but you will know if it's working for you or not.
Yeah.
Because if it's too simple and your life is more complex than it is, then the simplicity is not going to be elegant and seamless. It's going to be frustrating and difficult. So again, I'm not against the idea of simplicity. Don't make it any more complicated than it needs to be. But certainly don't make it more simplistic without thoughtfulness, right?
Yeah.
And I've done that myself. I've reduced, for example, one of the main tenets of getting more done is that once you have your life categories, you create those categories as the primary structure across your entire world. So, for example, in Evernote, my stacks and notebooks all maintain the life categories as best as I can, right? They're all my life categories.
Okay, can you give an example? Let's stick with Evernote, because now you got me going. please explain a bit more.
Right, so I have a health folder, right?
Okay.
And that health folder has all of the things.
Not a stack, a folder.
Yeah, just a notebook. Okay. Yeah, yep. Just a notebook, and it just says health. And that allows me to have tags that that filter, you know, based on the tag inside of health. I have an education notebook, so for anything that I'm learning, any new degree that I might be studying for, you know, those kinds of things, those are all in there. I have a work stack with each of the businesses inside of the work stack. And I have a relationships notebook, which just handles contact records, business cards, those kinds of things, and so on and so forth. So, you know, they're as best as they can be matching the life categories.
Okay.
Now, if we take this over to, say, the calendar, all the calendar systems allow you to have multiple calendars in the same account. Well, now I have a health calendar, and that has where, you know, if I'm going for a run with a friend, if I'm going to the gym, if I'm doing anything health related, it goes in there, doctor's appointments and so on and so forth. This allows it to be automatically color coded so that when I look at my calendar, I know what's happening. And if I have a business meeting, it's going to go on my business calendar. And if it's a personal, you know, dinner with friends, it's going to go on my personal calendar, right? All of those match up as best as they can to the same set of life categories.
Okay.
Dropbox, Google Drive, Gmail labels, you name it. Across my world, I have a consistent set of naming conventions so that, one, while I'm processing my inboxes or clarifying my inboxes, I am consistently and always aware of where things go, because it's very simple, because it's across my entire system.
Mm-hmm.
Likewise, when I go to find something, I don't have to think, oh, where is that thing? I think, what category of life, I go to that category of life, and then I search within that category of life. And if it's not in Evernote in my health notebook, well, it's very easy for me now to think, okay, well, let me go to Google Drive or to Dropbox and look in the health, you know, folders within those. And I've limited the search for a rate of finding, you know, the percentage and the quality of my finding things is near 99%.
That's good.
Right? There's never a time when I don't look for something that I don't find it, because by its very nature, I have created a system where there are big buckets. And it also makes filing faster, right? So a lot of problems with filing is that it takes so much time to think about. Once you have those things organized, it's across the entire system. So whether I'm throwing something into a folder, I'm throwing something into a Gmail label or putting it in the calendar, it's very natural.
I like this. If you take the time to categorize your life, you will optimize your systems for findability, as we call it, or searchability. So you will find it faster. This is really good. But I have a question if we zoom out. Now the listeners may be, this sounds really good, but what do you recommend to create the categories? I think we should try to clarify. Just sit down and write down 10, 15 areas and then try to go with that for a couple of months and see what happens.
So I have an Evernote note that has a template of the categories that I make recommendations to people all the time. Mm-hmm. And that's those, you know, 10 or so categories that you can start with. And then you can decide, that doesn't make any sense to me, and I need three subcategories, you know. So maybe you decide that under health you have, you know, fitness, nutrition, and sleep, as opposed to me, who's decided that I'm just going to have a health folder and then tag things with those things. You know, you decide on what the structure is, but I have a template for people to be able to use, so they're not starting from scratch. Obviously, you can use any number of different methodologies. For example, Dr. Stephen Covey, in The Seven Habits of Highly Effective People and the Eighth Habit, he gives you the framework of the four quadrants, right? Spiritual, mental, emotional, and physical. So he gives you those four quadrants to be able to basically segment your life, right? Mm. And I'm a huge fan of Dr. Covey's work. And so I think that if people start with those four categories, they're good to go.
Yep.
You know, you can easily start to think of the different ways. If you use the Bagua, if you use any number of different existing systems, some of these ancient and otherwise, you can create the categories. But like I said, look at the template, and then that would be a good place to start from, because you can just start to say, okay, these make sense for my life, these don't make sense for my life.
Is it possible to share your template on the show notes?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Great. So then we'll have a start, and I would like that you reference Stephen Covey's book. It's definitely a recommended read, for sure. It was a long time I read it now. I remember, you know, sharpen the saw or sharpen the axe from that book.
But I would say, for any person who's going to read The Seven Habits, do not give up there. Read The Eighth Habit. If nothing else, listen to the audiobook or the audio version of The Eighth Habit, because there's nothing like listening to Dr. Covey speak.
Mm, perfect. Good advice. Okay, so we have, how do you, if we stick with Evernote now, how do you, let's say you have the categories in place, how do you, you mentioned naming conventions before, what's your naming convention, for instance, if we stick to health?
Yeah, so I label things based on the type of knowledge unit. Right. So if for example, so I think of Evernote as a compilation, as a database of knowledge units. And this is, I think, potentially fundamentally different than how some other people categorize or look at Evernote. Right. So Evernote for some people is a document. Right. It's like a repository of documents. But that's really not what a note is. Mm-hmm. A note is a unit of knowledge. It's a unit of wisdom, almost. It's that I have spent time and energy and applied it to something, and that allows me to annotate an existing piece of datum. So it can be generative, right? I can create that datum, and then once I've created it, I can now annotate what I've already put in there. I can modify it, I can add to it, and through that process, you've created a knowledge unit. And so a note can carry, as you know, just text, but it can also additionally carry audio, video, PDF, documents, and links, and so on and so forth. So this is a highly flexible unit of knowledge. And people tend to think of Evernote as being a document where you can attach things to it, but misrepresenting the idea that you're actually creating units of knowledge. So here goes an example.
Yes.
I decide to create a unit of knowledge based on my understanding of Stoicism, right?
Sure.
And so I go ahead and I can pull up a PDF that I found online that summarizes, you know, Seneca or Marcus Aurelius or otherwise. And I can throw those all into a single Evernote note and annotate the PDF, right? I didn't have to create five different notes for that and be able to do that. And so in that case, I would label the note as, in my case, summary of Stoicism.
Okay.
And I'm sorry, I didn't use the category of health for you, but
no problem. So what category would this in your case, would this what category would it be?
For me, it would be philosophy, and that's where I hold spirituality and any other philosophical studies. Hmm. It could also be under education, for example. But again, I've just created the rubric for myself that when I'm talking about isms, they go into philosophy, right? Yeah. And that's just a very natural. It go into education?
Yeah.
It could, but no reason to mince over those things, because you could just tag something against the other categories. So I'll give you an example. I decided to go to the doctor, right? And it's for a running injury. Well, I have a health notebook, right? And I have the medical bill. Yeah. From going to the doctor for running. So I label that naming convention will be bill or invoice for. Mm-hmm. In my case, I use the term invoice. Okay. So I'm going to write invoice for and then whatever the doctor's visit is and maybe mm-hmm. the date of the visit if it's, you know, if I need to.
Okay.
And I'll throw the item in there and maybe I'll write any notes I had about which I talked to the doctor. And now I'm going to put that into my personal finance notebook, mm-hmm. right? I'm going to tag it health. So now if I wanted to search for all things health related that were not in my health notebook because they're multi-categorical,
yes.
I can now find that. So you have the tagging system is replicated with your life categories, the stacks and notebooks that you have set up so that you can always find cross-referenced items where they may not live within the same notebook as the category.
I see. How many notebooks do you use on a regular basis in your Evernote, roughly?
In my system, I think I have about 85 to 90.
Okay.
Yeah. And they fluctuate because I create them sometimes based on a project that I'm working on with a client, and then that project or notebook will go away when it's done.
Yeah.
So I will tag that note, all the notes in that notebook with the project name and the date it closed. Those will go to the archive notebook, then the notebook will go away.
Okay, I see.
So I don't keep notebooks around very long other than my life category notebooks.
I see. I mean, we talked... So once again, it's really important with naming convention. The two previous guests that we have with Evernote Focus, they weren't fans of tags like you are. It sounds like you're a tag fan. So for the listeners, it's important to know that you can merge all these systems, but you have to find your own way. So you can test using tags. You can test using notebooks. For me, I tested both, and it's back and forth in my life. So
and I think that proves something. I think that proves that the hybrid is better than the than being extremist about either. Right. So I'm not all tags. I'm not all notebooks.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a mixture of the two that allows me to, through search, find everything all the time.
Exactly.
I never can't find anything thanks to Evernote, because I know its limitations, and there are limitations, but I know exactly where I put things based on just a little bit of front work, right? Just with a little bit of work, I put it in the right notebook with the right tags, and then the rest of it is captured by good search, right?
Exactly.
So when I mess up, it will help me find it by having the search functionality sort of figure things out.
Yeah, I think a good metric for the listeners is that the time it takes for you to find something, if it takes longer than, I don't know, 10 seconds or 1 minute to find a note, then you need to change your system. Something like that. Do you agree?
Yes, and it also depends on the number of times you're looking for something as to whether or not you're going to save a search. So in Evernote or in a number of different systems, you are able to create saved searches and shortcuts to those saved searches. So I always say if you're going to search, you know, more than three times for something, then just go ahead and create a saved search and then a shortcut to it. And that way, and or a shortcut to it, because they are independent items. And that way you're not constantly looking around for the same types of data. And the great part about a saved search is that it's dynamic. So if you add more notes, if you add more information, it's going to be able to surface those new notes as long as they fit the criteria of the search.
I like it. I like the knowledge unit, the thinking. I like what we're learning here, different approaches. So I want to ask you something specific with perhaps your GTD setup for Evernote, managing the GTD framework within Evernote.
So over time, the GTD meetup members had been asking me for a way to merge the two, because I talk about Evernote all the time, obviously, and I'm excited about using Evernote, but I don't use Evernote as a task manager. So I challenged myself to develop a desktop use of Evernote as a GTD task manager. And I can provide you with a link to a tutorial that I've recorded. And by the time this goes live, I'll have posted it on YouTube and on my website. So you'll be able to have that. The video tutorial covers how to implement something akin to the secret weapon. Many people might know about the secret weapon. And
we will link to that as well if you haven't heard about the secret weapon. It's a TSV for short. It was one of the first, at least in my experience. It has been around for, I don't know, 10 years almost, 8 years or something. So, yeah. Sorry.
Yeah. Yeah, no problem. So the owner of that company had developed it and was the owner of a soft drink company, I think, had developed it. And it was like a carbonated beverage, and they were using it as a marketing vehicle, and was also a GTD fan, and he developed this secret weapon. And what I found from reviewing the system over time was that it was just very cumbersome. And I know there have been some modifications to the system over time. So what I wanted to do was create as simple a system as possible, and take the system and just be able to, just make it as simple as possible, right? So I went in and looked at the structure of the getting things done workflow process and what would be necessary to be able to create a task management system. And what I devised was six different notebooks that covered what would be necessary to create the system. So you have actions, a commonplace notebook, what we're just going to call commonplace, and a commonplace notebook is like a moleskin or any other notebook that you would carry.
Yeah.
Many people talk about Leonardo da Vinci. He carried a commonplace notebook, right? He carried this notebook where he kept all of his thoughts. But it's where you would keep meeting notes and other things that are just, either temporary or long-term, maybe a journal. And then you would have an inbox, a projects notebook, a projects and completed projects and actions completed notebook, and then a someday maybe notebook. And so those six notebooks represent really the entire GTD system if then you use tags correctly. And in the video tutorial, I show the creation of the tags so people can see sort of how the system works. But in essence, you're creating individual notes to be able to create new actions and new projects. And so the individual actions, the individual notes are the individual actions and projects that are created inside those notebooks. They are additionally tagged actions and projects, right? So it's a little bit redundant, but there's a reason for that. It now allows you to be able to filter against those things once they get completed and put into projects and actions completed. And you could do that like once a week during your weekly review.
Yep.
Just take all the notes in your actions notebook and tag them actions, all the things in your projects notebook, tag them projects. But the power of this is not actually in the basic structure of what I'm talking about. It's actually in Evernote's features, which are included in every version of the desktop for free up to premium and business levels, account levels. So whether you have a free account or not, you can create what's called table of contents notes.
Yes.
So if you tag actions, say calls, and you have 15 calls to make today, well, you can just search against your calls tag, so tag colon calls, and it will filter all of the calls, and you could just basically highlight that list, and then in the right-hand side panel of Evernote on the desktop version, you can just click on the Create Table of Contents node.
Yeah.
Well, now you have a list of every call you need to make today.
Yeah.
These lists that you create, the context-based actions lists that we talk about in Getting Things Done, they become ephemeral. They become something that's temporary that you use and then discard so that you don't have to keep worrying about managing these lists. You're managing the actions where they belong. You can mark them off when they're done or delete them or just move them to completed. And I like moving them to completed because there's a keyboard shortcut for that. So you could delete them if you wanted to, but if you want a record, you can just move them to completed. And both desktop applications give you the ability to move them by shortcut. So now, right? So if you have the note, which in this case represents the task, you go ahead and say, you know, Alt Command M, your notebook list pops up. You type in the notebook or the first couple characters of the notebook you want it to go to, and then it goes.
Now I know what you mean. I understand. Yes. It's similar to Alt.
You got it. So this idea of being able to move, and again, you can drag these as well. Most people don't know that, but you can drag notes to a notebook in your left panel. And this gives you a lot of different functionality that you otherwise would not be able to represent in a static list, right? If you created a list in a note and it was called the calls note, right? You have these lists of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 in the body of the note. That's not as powerful because they're not individual units that you can manipulate. You can create reminders based on those individual notes so that you can have a start date on your next actions so that those are represented by the reminder time to start the task. And then on projects, you can have due dates, and those are represented by the reminder tag on those. So,
I understand. Questions? Yes, well, I think this is for if this is the first time you hear about Evernote and GTD, please rewind the podcast like 20 episodes, because this is a bit complex for the average user, I think. But I think this has its place. But I tried the secret weapon, and I was very, you know, ferocious about it. But it took so much time, and the tag structure didn't really work for me personally. It sounds like it's very similar. And this with creating, I like creating table of contents notes, but then I guess you have to delete it afterwards or move it once the calls are done in this example.
Yeah. So in most cases, you have the option of being able to manifest the note, modify the note, say checking off the items that you've done. You know, you can go ahead and just delete them. And then, you know, in your daily review of your lists and notes and tasks, you can go ahead and move those things to completed or delete them if you don't want to keep them around. And then you have the option in your weekly review to clean up as well. So the GTD methodology gives you the opportunity to clean those things up, whereby you don't need to worry about the keeping a list clean necessarily. That's what your review time is for.
Yeah.
So when you're doing, go get things done. That's the whole point, right?
Yeah.
And when you get done with those things, then you can worry about cleaning it up. And again, like I said, it's not a perfect system. Evernote wasn't designed as a task management system. Yeah. So this was in my view, the most elegant solution to, you know, a square peg into a round hole. Hmm. And for example, I don't think the system really is devised for mobile. And so you have to really be desktop oriented for the system to work well for you, unless like me, I do a lot on my mobile phone, but I don't really manage my tasks. I always am at a full keyboard at a desktop yeah. solution when I'm managing my tasks. So it's not that big of a deal to me because I can add new items into Evernote and then fix those up basically on the Evernote desktop version. So it's not mobile friendly necessarily, but it's still pretty powerful. I mean, you can still do the saved searches yep. are still present. So you can look at this from a perspective of looking at actions and calls, any of those things in the mobile version, but you're not going to be able to create a table of contents note, for example. Yep, exactly. Then again, it's pretty flexible. So in essence, you could use just saved searches and shortcuts to represent the next actions lists. And I show that in the video as well. So you don't need to use table of contents notes. I just like the idea of being able to pull together a series of tasks, and that seemed to me the best solution for that. But save searches and shortcuts could work for people who don't want that.
All right. So what system are you using right now for your task management?
I kind of slipped and almost said it when I was saying it, but I use Remember the Milk.
Ah.
And Remember the Milk has been my steady workhorse. It's been my beast of burden for probably the last 10 to 12 years or so. And
Do you integrate it somehow in Evernote with linking to your notes or?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so Remember the Milk actually has an integration directly with Evernote, so it will, if you identify something as a reminder, it will automatically add it into Remember the Milk as a task.
Ah.
I actually don't use that. I use the note link and paste that into the URL field of any project that I've created in Remember the Milk. So remember, I'm not using Evernote for task management. That's what Remember the Milk is for. So the projects in Remember the Milk are all linked back to a project support note in my projects notebook back in Evernote. So I'm linking back to the projects note because I want to see the supporting documentation and those kinds of things attached to that project. And so Remember the Milk handles almost everything for me for personal task management.
All right. So we have been really nerdy right now. I want to ask you one more question about Evernote, and that is for the listeners, what do you think is a good starting point, or what do you think, perhaps another question would be, what the biggest mistake that users do when using Evernote from your point of view, experience?
Yeah, so they come at Evernote with it being a blank slate. And I think, like many tools that are highly flexible and highly modifiable, mm-hmm. they start to use it as a junk drawer, right? And so you just start throwing things in without having a premise on how you're actually going to approach the tool. So as I tell everybody, create the structure and then stick with it. And the reality is that you'll know when the structure is fundamentally flawed and how you need to change it to be better for you. But most often than not, if someone decides to be, say, focused on handling Evernote for one area of their life, and I usually recommend people to choose a specific area of their life where they want to handle something. So if you want to manage your recipes, okay, create a recipes notebook, and then manifest all the tags you're going to need to manage your recipes. Master that.
And then expand.
Capable of replicating. Uh-huh. Yeah, you can replicate it across the rest of your system. But if you try to do everything all at once, you're gonna have more difficulty than not. So I really love people to start off with a specific system, right? And this goes back to life categories. Yep. What's the systems that I need to manage that particular area of my life, or the systems necessary to manage that area of my life? Okay, groceries. Great. I'm gonna have a grocery list. And I'm going to put all the things that I generally buy at the groceries, individual notes. And then before I go to the grocery store, I'm going to highlight the items I need, create a table of contents note, and now, voila, I have a grocery list.
Perfect.
So you have a lot of flexibility with the system. You just have to start with one area.
Yes. So Looking into the future, I mean, you've been using Evernote for a while. You're an ECC, you're a GTD meetup chief of command, or what we should call you. But looking into the future, where do you see productivity going, and perhaps where you see Evernote going? And where are you going? Three questions in one.
Well, I think that we're in for probably some more strife in the labor space, which is to say that we are at the precipice of a change in technology. And so people are, we're humans, and we are not prepared for the amount of change that technology has brought to bear. That is, you know, manufacturing jobs are becoming automated, and knowledge workers are still fairly new to the idea of knowledge work, and we are all still kind of dealing with some of the strife that's involved there. To the greater extent, I always say to people, you know, humans evolve based on millennia or hundreds of millennia. Computers evolve on a daily or hourly basis, right? So the technology being created for us is substantially different in the way in which we interact with it than the way in which we developed to utilize it, to get its best effect out of it. So we all need to learn to use technology well. We don't know yet what well means, what dealing with technology for our greatest benefit as humans is. It's still in infancy. So I think that's where we're headed. We're headed for a little bit more difficulty in understanding that. And I would love to research this eventually as a doctoral student.
Oh, okay.
And look at researching how personal productivity, technology, and the workforce itself is dealing with the changes happening around them, right, mm-hmm. and to them. And so that's one. Two, Evernote,
yes.
I think Evernote is going to move with the cheese, right? So Evernote is going to look down the pike and look at the different areas in which it can become more focused on our productivity, at least from my perspective, and I don't have any insights into what's happening. Very similar to Manuel and to Stacey who are on your show.
Yes.
We don't have any magic crystal balls, but I do think Evernote needs to take advantage of the new technologies that are out there. You know, as Manuel talked about, you know, machine learning,
yep.
and, you know, the use of these technologies to be able to help Evernote predict what you want, and also just in the idea of better file management, right?
Yep.
So, you know, currently has auto-filing. You can turn on that box so that when you send something into Evernote yep. to the inbox by email or through other services, it will go ahead and auto-file it and even try to apply a tag. Better learning of that system
yeah.
means less work on the individual's part. So I yes. see Evernote becoming a tool that will be better at managing productivity and being better at managing a team environment. Obviously, that's a big focus for Evernote with the development of Evernote Business and having all of us ECCs on board.
Yeah.
And, you know, there are now some over 700 of us yeah. globally. And, you know, we are here to help people know how to invest in Evernote in our various specialties, how to invest in Evernote in their own businesses. And I think that it's a clear sign of where Evernote sees Evernote going, right, which is into more of a business environment yeah. and the importance of that in society. And then for myself, I'm just going to continue doing what I'm doing. You know, productivity is a passion of mine. It's something that I absolutely love. It's a community that I love. Mm. And this year I launched with Augusto Pinaud and a regular set of contributors, Productivity Cast, the weekly show about all things productivity. And so that's a weekly podcast, and nice. We're going to do more episodes and just keep doing it.
Is it a guest podcast, or is it you two discussing different topics or a mix?
So Augusto is my co-host, and then we have regular contributors who have joined us. Right now we have Art Gelwicks and Francis Wade, and we're hoping to have a new contributor very soon joining us, but unfortunately I can't announce that at the moment because he or she is not yet joining us. But so there are four of us right now on the recordings, and we are talking about a wide variety of issues that we think are really important for people to take to heart, to hear us. It's a conversation style podcast, so we're not, you know, we're not in a lecture format, so it's really great. Maybe we'll do some Oxford style debate type podcasts. And
what's the typical length for a podcast for you guys?
Range from about 40 to 55 minutes in terms of the length of the podcast.
All right. I know you're a busy man, busy person, very close to the end. Is it anything you want to mention that we haven't talked about? I mean, we will link to everything you do, the Productivity Cast, your website, and all other URLs, of course. But is it anything you want to talk about?
No, I think that's it. I think we covered a good swath of information.
Yes, for sure.
I know that this is probably an episode for people who are a little bit more on the intermediate to advanced side of productivity.
I will say so. I will make an introduction about that, because this is very, if you're new to Evernote, you will perhaps be scared. But
yes,
don't be afraid. No, just listen to the episode several times. It would be nice. But before we go, I have a final question that I try to ask almost every episode. It's called K-Wink. It's knowing what I now know. What would you have done differently, let's say, the last 10 years of your life?
That's a big question, and yes. I have a very simple answer to it, which is that I would have tried to understand the implication of mobile technology and how it would have affected my personal productivity so vastly over the last decade. I really didn't think about it. I intuitively always, you know, I'm a gadget enthusiast. So I've got all the digital technologies throughout the last 20 years, and I've always been tech focused. But I really didn't realize that mobile technology would have so vastly changed the way in which I interact with the world. And if I had given more thought to that, I would have probably set up a more simple system. You know, I got to a simple system. You know, the whole concept of getting more done is about the simplest possible system for as a complex world as I'm in. And that means other people can make it simpler for them even more. But if I had thought about that, mobile technology requires making things as simple and as elegant as possible. And I didn't do that. I overcomplicated my world for so long. And now that I'm at a point where I have simplified to the point where it just seamlessly works across desktop and mobile, mm-hmm. I'm glad that I got there. I wish I'd gotten there a little faster.
Okay. That's a perfect way to end the podcast, I think. So, Ray, thank you for being on the Flawed Podcast. It was an honor, and it was very informative. Thank you.
Thank you, Peter.
All right. Thank you very much for listening to the Flawed Podcast. Thanks, Ray, for taking the time, sharing your knowledge about Evernote and productivity. Deeply appreciated. Theme music by Erik Rådbo. Thank you, Erik. For show notes for this episode and all other episodes, visit flawed.se/podcast. And also, I would appreciate if you could give us a 5-star review and help us share the Flawed Podcast and guests like Ray and the other guests, of course. I just love to talk about productivity. One of the reasons is that it has helped me a lot to have less input and more output. That is the reason why I have created an online course after interviewing so many productivity experts, reading so many books, and also implementing all these strategies, technologies, and thought patterns to improve my life. The course is called Focused Productivity. Check it out on flow.se or in the show notes. If you're a social person or if you're on social media, we are of course also active in social media in all months except January and August. You can check us out. This is Flawed in One Word on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, YouTube, and so on.
If you want to get the latest news of what we're doing, sharing some ideas and thoughts, please sign up for our newsletter, which we send out on a monthly basis-ish. I also want to give a shout out to one of our sponsors, Puri. It's a supplement company that helps me in training and of course also in productivity. We're looking for synergy, so if you take a supplement you also want to get the most bang for the buck. So for instance, if you live in Scandinavia, now is a good time to take vitamin D supplements. It increases your mood and overall health during the dark months in the winter time. I'm also a CrossFit mobility trainer, improving range of motion every Thursday in CrossFit Backaplan / Tortus Fitness here in Gothenburg, Sweden. For feedback, guest suggestions, any questions that you have, please send them to me. You can reach me at pl@flawed.se. I read everything. Thanks again for listening, and I want to wish you a extremely productive morning, evening, afternoon, and until next time, remember, luck fortunes the brave.